All right, so to start with, your names are?
Dave Nichols.
Would you spell Nichols?
N-I-C-H-O-L-S.
Okay, and?
Sharon Roy, R-O-Y.
And Sharon?
Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N.
Okay. And your vehicle is called?
Freedom One.
Freedom One.
Freedom One. And your company is?
21st Century Motor Works.
You might as well give me your address and stuff.
It's the 21st Century Motor Works at yahoo.com.
Okay.
All right, and the company's name is just plain 21st Century Motor Works.
Okay.
.com.
And you're
website,
from?
Website, www.21stcenturymotorworks.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're based out of?
Dayville, Connecticut.
Huh?
Dayville, Connecticut.
Spelled Dayville?
D-A-Y-V-I-L-L-E.
Okay. So, and tell me technically about what your vehicle, what it is and why it is.
It's actually a 1989 F-150 Ford pickup truck. It uses a modified version of a gasification technology. We found a way to increase the efficiency and make a version of the Imbert gasifier that basically operates on a level that's higher than the original German versions. We basically have a carbon dioxide and water output fuel no matter what we throw in it for any type of biomass.
Okay, biomass. Define about biomass.
Biomass can be anything naturally grown. Plants, wood, grass clippings, leaves, wood chips, brush, construction building materials, cardboards, you know, things that don't have any extreme chemicals in them. But the machine basically runs on anything.
Anything that burns that comes from an organic
source, correct.
If you can eat it, it can eat it.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't had much grass lately.
I don't try.
But lettuce.
Yeah.
Okay. Not that different. All right. And the basic technology of gasification is?
All right, the basic technology, believe it or not, is about 200 years old.
Yeah.
It's a version of creating energy for engines, and it was originally created to create lamp gas. That's how we actually started with it. It was an old lamp gas book I found from the 1800s.
Okay.
We basically engineered a system that allows us to run any internal combustion engine with it.
Okay. Now, is this used lyes or any other chemistry?
There's a lot of chemistry in this.
Okay.
There's a lot of chemistry.
Chemicals?
No chemicals. No. Everything is basically the biomass in and carbon dioxide and water out. With very few, there's a very small output of like an ash-type material, but it's white. Some of it's magnetic. If we suspect it's minerals and, you know, material that probably made it into the tree dirt that made it into the wood. Very, very, very little output.
Okay.
Which means it's all turned into fuel.
It's all turned into fuel. Okay. Except for the carbon dioxide and water that comes out.
The carbon dioxide and water that leaves, wood and biomass of pretty much every shape, fashion, or form is made up of three compounds, mostly carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And the wood, it just has it in a certain format with certain helixes and atoms. Other materials like grass may have the exact same compounds in different forms with water, some without. Basically, what our machine does is under a vacuum with extreme temperature, we basically tear those molecules apart. We run them through run them through a process of shocking them between too much oxygen to burn and not enough in a quick succession of time, and a lot of heat recirculation back upon itself, and I'm basically shocking the molecules into simple hydrocarbons and hydrogen fuel. There's a lot of chemistry involved. I can't explain it quickly.
Okay, but you don't put chemical reagents into this.
No. What I mean by chemical, I'm referring to chemicals as basic elements, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. The compounds that those three make are basically chemicals, like carbon dioxide is technically a chemical.
Okay.
All right, it's a compound of material that I just use the language is the same.
All right, let me see if I can play it back to you to your satisfaction. So you take biomass, so wood, put it in, heat it, and expose it to oxygen and not.
Yep, and shock
in there. You're taking energy to do that. Extract hydrogen, and are basically running the engine as a hydrogen internal combustion engine.
When you enter, what goes in is equal to what goes out. What happens is when I enter hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen in their compounds.
As wood.
My machine will, through a succession of, the chemistry is complicated, but I'll simplify it. Carbon has an affinity for oxygen stronger than any other element on the chart. When carbon at certain elevations of temperature, carbon has the ability to strip an oxygen molecule away from water. Well, what happens is we know where that is. The machine is designed to do that. That machine is actually using water as a fuel. It's a partial fuel. It's not using it as a sole source.
Right.
The carbon, hydrogen, oxygen compounds in the wood are broken apart, and at a certain point in time, any water or hydrogen carbon compounds are torn apart. And what happens is when the carbon is elevated at temperature enough, and we do this in a pattern in the machine at a very high speed, where it's almost like a rapid heat, rapid shock, cool, rapid heat, rapid shock, cool. And the carbon will hurry up and hoard all the oxygen molecules to make hydrocarbon compounds, and the hydrogen, by the time the shock is left single-handed.
Right.
At the end of the machine, what happens, I've got a very substantial amount of hydrogen gas, but I've also got compounds because carbon had a stronger grab than the hydrogen did at certain temperatures. I have a lot of different hydrogen, carbon, oxygen compounds, hydrocarbons, that are identical to what's in your gas, but they're very simple in molecular form. They're not as...
Long chains.
They're not long chains, long helixes, the bondings are very, very simple. But they're the same fuel characteristic. Now, in an internal combustion engine, such as this, there are actually two explosions that take place burning this fuel. When you, on a regular gasoline vehicle, there's one explosion when the spark plug hits, the gasoline is broken up, but because of the complex structure of gasoline's hydrocarbon chains, there's a lot of pollution. The elements are not broken up perfectly. There's one energy surge that cannot physically tear apart all those molecules. And my fuel, with the way our system's doing it, and very other similar systems also, what we're doing is the hydrocarbon part of that fuel ignites probably a millisecond or less before the hydrogen does. So the hydrogen, the hydrocarbons break up, and then there's probably a few that didn't break up, but you can guarantee they do when the hydrogen ignites. And then what happens, the energy is taken away from that reaction in the form of the movement of the piston, and there's a rapid cooling that takes place on the exhaust cycle of the engine. Well, what happens on the exhaust cycle, the temperature is now dropping below where the carbon can continue to activate again. So what leaves, hydrogen can now grab oxygen molecules as part of the reaction. So now the hydrogen forms water molecules that go out the tailpipe, and there are only carbon and oxygens left. And you'll probably get some O2s, a small amount, but most of it goes out as a carbon dioxide gas.
Okay.
So that's about 99% of our exhaust.
Okay. And none of the reaction byproducts are exhausted from the reactor.
No, it's a sealed system.
They all go through the engine.
Absolutely.
It's not burning. It's important for people to know this is not a glorified wood stove. It's not burning it.
Yep. Right. Okay. So it's
not smoking.
Okay.
Yep.
Does this bear any resemblance to during the wars they
absolutely
also tried to run vehicles on coal dust, which strikes me that that's that carbon in
on coal dust. I don't know where you got that, but it's possible they were burning coal dust. But the Germans had systems, and the Finnish and a lot of European countries had gasification style systems, usually in the form of an invert gasifier.
What's that word you're using?
Invert.
Spell it, please.
I-M-B-E-R-T.
Okay.
Yep. The invert.
Meaning?
It's the name of the gentleman that invented or patented that particular design system.
Okay.
It was a very good gasification system, but it had a lot of problems. They generated a lot of particulate matter. There was a lot of filtration issues. The engines were damaged by it over the long term. There were a lot of improper designs out there. The technology basically after the war disappeared. What didn't fall apart on its own, I'm very sure oil companies made sure it wasn't coming back to be perfected.
Right.
And proof of that is very interesting. I wish I could give you the picture. I have a picture. You know who one of the largest manufacturers of gasifiers in the world was? Ford Motor Company.
Right.
I have seen a picture of a Ford emblem on a gasifier on a Swedish or a German vehicle that had a U.S. patent number on it that has been rescinded.
Yeah.
The patent, there is no evidence that patent exists.
Okay. But stay a little bit away from the politics and come back to the vehicle driving in this car. So how long has it been on the road?
A little over a year, plus or minus. It's had a couple different versions. This particular reactor has been coupled to this engine for a little under 18,000 miles now. We're driving it every day. It's been a pretty... We're using it to see how long it's going to last. Okay. The engine right now is holding up 100%. We basically do a compression test on it every once in a while just to watch for cylinder wear. I am 155 pounds of compression every cylinder for the last 18,000 miles. It's not using any oil. There are no valve issues. The power is great. The machine is making a perfectly clean fuel.
Okay. And how many cords to a kilowatt?
We did an unofficial experiment with I had a cheap cord of wood delivered at the house. We measured it up, set it right up, and we basically cut it up and ended up with about 5,700 miles before that wood was completely consumed.
And this was just maple or?
It was a junk load of cordwood that I paid $100 for to be dropped in my yard.
Okay.
Yep. There was no science behind it. It was the object of this entire thing is to be able to use anything for fuel. And if you're going to go to your local cordwood guy and say, give me a cord of wood, that truck will take you 5,700 miles on $100 worth of cordwood.
Okay. You've been showing this at events, and this is just another opportunity to show what you've got. Where do you see this going?
Right now, this particular machine can solve most, if not all, of our energy needs. The particular unit you see right there obviously drives. It has the capability to drive. It's set up as a hybrid for legal reasons, but it has the capacity to run 100% on wood or biomass or anything like that. The same unit has the power to generate up to 10 kilowatts of electricity with an onboard generator, and there's a heating coil assembly that I can capture the heat of the reactor to do a third job, like heat a home. So in a novelty form, as you see that truck today, I can actually eliminate somebody's total carbon footprint. I can take the carbon footprint of fossil fuels away from your gasoline, eliminating your gasoline bill. I can heat your home with that vehicle if you so choose to have the lifestyle. And I can generate you 10 kilowatts of electricity to use however you wish using that same carbon-free footprint.
Okay. Now, you have the gasifier on the bed of the truck driving it around. If I put this on my house, obviously I could run... a burner heater.
Yep.
What would I put into a canister or a bottle or a tank to put in my car so that I could run off this?
I have not found any advantage to store. There's a lot of safety issues with storing gas fuels. Mm-hmm. Like some of these hydrogen cars really scare me, because technically when you put a large tank of hydrogen, even though it's a good fuel for an automobile, but it's a very inefficient fuel for energy use. So you have to carry a large amount of hydrogen to do the normal job of even my vehicle. You're driving a bomb. I don't care how they describe it. They can make them as bulletproof as they want. You are driving a bomb. With my vehicle, I'm actually making the fuel out of inert biomass as I drive. If my vehicle were to be involved in a serious accident, even where that reactor was tore right open, the reaction inside would immediately stop, because the fuel does not ignite in open air very easily. It has to be metered to a perfect rate for it to get any kind of usefulness. The reaction immediately stops, and you've got some charcoal and a lot of wood blocks. It's actually safer to drive than the original truck was with 50 gallons of gas on it.
Okay, so...
So the safety issue, I really see no advantage in trying to bottle the fuel. I don't think chemically it can be done anyway because of the way the structure of the fuel is.
But it strikes me that putting it as a stationary thing for stationary use might even be more practical.
We have massive interest on both sides of the coin. I was concentrating on vehicles for the novelty effect and the fact that it's forcing me to design lightweight, easy to maneuver. Like the reactor you see on that truck is about three times too large for it.
Okay.
When we build one for the proper size, it'll be less than one-third the size of what you see. The stationary application, the public seems to be breaking up into two things. 50% of them agree with me. They love the transportation three-use idea. But I'm getting a lot of feedback in the form of emails and interest that the stationary generation is their part of the interest. Geography makes a big difference. If somebody lives out in Maine, out in the woods, and they have cabins or multiple properties, my vehicle could travel your entire energy need with you. or however you want to live, somebody that has a house in the suburbs that's got one of these outdoor wood stoves that's kicking their neighbors off with all the smoke could buy a version of my unit where you have no chimney, so you eliminate all the smoke. I'm not burning wood. When you're burning wood, you're only getting 20% of the energy out of it. You're sending 80% out the smokestack is heat and pollutants. While I'm getting the heat out of the wood, I'm also, the byproduct is a generation of fuel that this internal combustion engine can do another job with, and I can get 4 to 5 times the energy out of that same amount of wood.
Okay. Do you sell this product at this point?
Not yet. We are in the process of attempting a patent on the core. There's some legal implications with, we're limited in how much we can show. We cannot make any, I cannot sell any of these units. This is the prototype you see is the one. We've got a couple versions, but they're completely in our control. We are not even allowed to demonstrate or give somebody one as a demonstration until the patent process is complete. Once it's complete, we're looking to get them out there. We've got a massive amount of interest in the idea. I could make thousands of these things and have them pre-sold now just by the feedback we've already got. And I haven't even gotten to one-third of the responses yet. So the market is definitely there. The people like this idea. You know, I think part of the economics of it are strong. Well, there's enough dead trees and leaves on properties to power us for years.
And reclaim landfills.
And reclaim landfills. You can do anything with it. But the nicest thing about it is it meets everybody's criteria in one way or another. I like it, and she likes it, and everybody else will like it because you can save $5,000 to $10,000 a year in your energy costs running one of my machines. The environmentalists like it because when you save that $5,000 in fuel costs, you're benefiting from that, but you're also not burning $5,000 worth of fossil fuel contributing to global warming.
It's all recent carbon.
This is all in the cycle as it is. When that tree dies, or that when that tree or that biomass dies and rots, it becomes the same carbon dioxide that's coming out of my tailpipe. I'm in that green circle 100% with that machine. And the interest between the environmental people, the real world that everybody's forgotten about, the people that we have to live and pay in this environment, and anybody else that just wants to live green, we meet all the criteria. You can't get more energy independent. The government wants us to be energy independent of foreign oil. You can't get more energy independent than going in your backyard, scraping up leaves, and running your truck or powering your house with it. I think that's...
outside of the rich world, is there a market for this sort of thing in the second world and the third world?
Probably endless.
Okay.
My guess,
so there's nothing particularly elaborate or, I mean, there's no platinum in that
not at
machine.
All, not at all.
Okay, so it's careful construction and understanding the fundamental.
The nice thing about that machine you see there, this is where we benefit for the little guys, right? In our country or anywhere else. When's the last time you saw a green energy product that could save you lots of money? This machine that you see, right down to the day that it's recycled, is simplest. It's simplest construction. The materials in it are not toxic. It's steel and ceramics. Even the recycling of this thing is light years ahead of all these electronic high-tech vehicles or all these plastics and acids and lithiums. Anybody could repair it. And when you're done with it, crush it, make it into beer cans, and build another one with the same material. It's actually 100% recyclable in itself.
Okay, so it's straightforward, simple.
Absolutely.
Okay, no unobtainium involved.
Nope.
Okay. Anything I'm forgetting to ask?
I don't think so.
You got your whole spiel out?
The options that, the options that, you know, what we're trying to do represent is, the spiel's never ending.
Options, but just don't repeat yourself.
You know, the people have spoken to us, and everywhere we go, we're finding that nobody knows this technology is possible. All right? We even had a U.S. congressman come up and absolutely amazed at what we were doing. He's actually trying to help us, going to give us a little bit of initiative to kind of educate the government to put some grant money out there that this does exist, and this is something for the little guys that pay all the taxes. Our national goals can be solved. You know, everybody's not going to use this thing. Statistically, I can't get all the market. Nobody ever will.
You won't find it on the airplanes.
Absolutely. You won't find it. But if 1 out of 10 bought it, you're eliminating 1/10 of our carbon footprint eliminating one-tenth of our dependence on fossil oil, let it sell itself from that point.
And that infrastructure, there's so much that can go wrong with the current infrastructure. Your backup generator won't work.
Without gas.
Without gas. If
right.
you can't take your little red can to the gas station and get gasoline, then you're stuck. So for a lot of people, this could be their disaster recovery, their disaster plan. What are we going to do? Go to Home Depot, buy one of these, put it behind the house.
I'm thinking about, you know, all the garbage that, I mean, we buy foods and we use some of it, but there's a lot of waste.
Still, this would be just another bin.
You've got another
recycling bin.
Yep.
You got your glass, you got your cans, and now you got the stuff that you can burn in the unit behind the house.
My wife puts it in the composter, but I'm thinking, okay.
You can heat your house and fry electricity
absolutely.
With it.
You're getting the last service out of your debris. Like a lot of people, one of the reasons this machine was built was we were spending, I'm a construction contractor by trade, we were spending thousands of dollars on dumpsters, getting rid of all of our wood waste, paper, cardboard products, and stuff from building the homes. You know, the energy content of what I'd had to pay to throw away is astronomical.
Right.
It's not happening anymore. You know, these machines will run all my heavy equipment and anybody else once we get the system set up.
On anything but sheetrock.
Yeah, everything. I can run the paper on the sheetrock. Yep. No, but, you know, it can eliminate waste streams, eliminating
yep.
pollution. You know, if somebody with a brain wants to look at the system and think of something I haven't, I'm sure there are.
How about waste oils, like cooking oils?
The cooking oil thing is kind of over because, you know, the cooking oil is like, you know, how many McDonald's is, how many...
They're already charging for it,
yeah, they? Plus it's not free anymore. My fuel's still free. The cooking oil stuff, the restaurants now are starting to sell it. It's pretty much run its course. It was a great idea. The complexities of it are temperature related. There's a lot of problems with it. It's costly now to buy the kits that do it. You end up spending almost what you did on the gas, creating like the stuff.
And you do, well, at least in some cases, you have to put in lies and stuff.
Absolutely. You're right. You're dealing with more chemicals, more problems. Absolutely.
Okay. No. Well, there's some people who just take the oil, filter it, and treat it as liquid oil.
Yeah.
But when you're getting biodiesel,
it's
you're trying
to. You still have to get. You still have to get the oil. I don't know what you want.
But if we have an energy crisis, then where's the cooking oil won't be getting to McDonald's either.
Yeah.
The other interesting part, I don't know how much of this you want to record, but the energy plan that they have right now that they're searching for fuel, this liquid biofuel game, I started getting involved in it over there. I didn't complete it. This is what you probably should write if you'd like to. They're looking for liquid biofuels right now that are going to use our food supply as the main source of the materials.
Well, clearly that's not sustainable.
Yeah, well, not absolutely. But you know something? You look at the government's grant process right now. That's all they're putting money on. There's nothing else. So when they do find it, they're going to shove it down our throats. The farmers will lobby and benefit for it, and they'll gain. But you're going to end up paying $5 or $10 a gallon for this fuel, and it's going to take 2 gallons to do what 1 gallon of gasoline did. So after you just spent $10 for the gasoline to go buy your $30 loaf of bread, because the cost of the flour was so high, this machine eliminates the entire chain from. I don't even need the food crops. I don't need to transport the materials to a factory. I don't need to run a whole factory. I don't need to have all the people driving their cars to the factory. I don't need to power the factory. I don't need to transport that fuel to gas stations that have to be specially built with more of our tax dollars. I don't need to put you through all the tax game of the fuel. I can take you directly from the garbage in your backyard directly to using it with the best environmental advantage going right now. You have no carbon footprint.
Okay.
But from the jobs point of view, you don't have to do any of that, but secondary industries could come up, putting people to work, reclaiming the gook that's in the landfills, getting that land back.
Cleaning land.
There are people, not everyone's going to want to go in their backyard and find what they need, so there'll be jobs for people to do
secondary
that for them.
Industries to generate food supply.
It makes them very local.
Yeah.
Which is energy independent.
The handyman guy could now have another source of income.
Which is energy independence, again, without having to bankrupt the country. You know?
Yep. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much.